حفظ السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته.
وعليكم السلام ورحمة الله وبركاته and السلام عليكم to your listeners.
Now, many media outlets are reporting on the third Intifada as being violent and revolutionary, but there's more to the multifaceted roots of this uprising, not so?
Definitely, absolutely. We are hearing about the third Intifada, which according to some media outlets, they're reporting as it having begun in late 2015. And most of the outlets are describing the uprising as violent, reactionary. Some are even labeling it as the Intifada of the Knives. So, as always, many media outlets are failing to present the full picture, and many of our listeners are perhaps engaging in different forms of media, but not aware that there is such a multifaceted and far-reaching roots of this uprising. And this actually comes in response to Israel's decades-long occupation of Palestinian people and Palestinian land. Now, many media outlets are ignoring the peaceful resistance movements which, predated the Intifada and that are contributing to its sustenance. One story, and this is a story that we have been covering over the last few years itself, and many other media houses are covering on it and talking about it, but very, very inconsistently. And that's the story about one village in Palestine. It's in the West Bank, and it's called Bil'in. And for 10 years, and this is now the 11th year, residents in Bil'in are non-violently demonstrating against Israeli occupation. And they began in late 2005, and they've been protesting against Israel's ongoing construction of the apartheid wall. So many of us think that perhaps the apartheid wall is up in Palestine, and that's the end of it. But if there's continuous ongoing construction, and we need to be aware of that, it's hundreds of miles cutting through the West Bank, it's now even twice as high in some parts as the Berlin Wall. So they've been protesting week after week, and during this time, so many of them have been injured, so many of them have been imprisoned as well. But it is a protest that continues steadfastly, passionately, and peacefully. They've been arrested, many of these protesters have been killed, harassed, and even foreign activists and local activists actually face legal consequences for demonstrating with the people. It's a story we shouldn't lose sight of. The people of Bil'in, they've even donned avatar costumes during their oppression and their demonstration. Men, women, children, young and old. It's a very powerful sight to see. But you know, when we're talking about Palestine itself, let's not forget that this past weekend was also a reminder of something that happened on the 25th of February in 1994. Very few people talk about it, and even less people remember it. And I think as Muslims, when we're following news, it's a story that we should remember with a great sense of sadness and heartache. We know that on the 25th of February 1994, Baruch Goldstein, a member of an ultra-right-wing group, gunned down to Musallis in Masjid al-Khalil. And we also know that what happened in March of last week, especially over the weekend, Palestinians marched through al-Khalil to mark the anniversary of what is known as the Ibrahimi Masjid Massacre and to call for the reopening of the Al-Shuhada Street. We know that the Al-Shuhada Street was closed down, more than 300 businesses in 1994, including government administration, was closed down. And the local bus station was taken as an army base. It's practically become a ghost town. Those that have been fortunate to go and visit Al-Khalil will know exactly what I'm talking about. You can follow the hashtag Open Shuhada Street, and there is an active Facebook page for Open Shuhada Street South Africa on Facebook as well. So that's an update on what is happening, and for us to realize that there is much more to Palestinian resistance and the so-called third Intifada than meets the eye of the Western media.
On that note, Shimon Peres's visit to South Africa and the subsequent protests, has that received any coverage in the Middle East?
Partially lukewarm, depending on where we're looking at in the region. We know that Jordanian media is reporting on it. We find that Gulf media is more hush about it. When it is being reported on, it's more from an angle of analytical points of view to see if there are and will there still continue to be this parallel, this comparison between apartheid South Africa and Palestine is there still so much in common, and if not, the topic of BDS has been coming up, but more so is whether or not Palestine can be still viewed as apartheid Palestine in light of South Africa. Yes, it's still seen as South Africa being the comrades of the Palestinian cause, but whether or not it can still be viewed as apartheid is still a question that people are asking on the ground in the Middle East. But to be honest, those on the ground have such much bigger issues that they're focusing on, things like staying alive, getting to school uninjured, and pass through checkpoints as well.
It would be interesting to know what Arabic media has been saying about the ongoing refugee crisis. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, that's right. You know, we often talk about what is coming out from the English media or French media, but when it comes to what the Arab world is speaking about, how are they reacting? How are Arab commentators talking about the greatest refugee crisis since World War II? So some of the headlines that I've collected for you come from some of the major dailies. We're talking about Al-Thawra, Al-Tishreen, Al-Watan, and some of the headlines are points such as Germans arm themselves fearing refugees, and terrorists make their way into Europe in the guise of refugees. There's also headlines or subheaders like the West creates terrorist organizations to achieve its plan in the region, a British doctor incites to join ISIS, and Austria stops accepting refugees. So like Western media, Arabic media is also discussing the social and cultural implications of the migration crisis, but with greater focus on the perspective of the migrants and the region they left behind. When it comes to Arab media, there's also more attention to individual tragedy. There was the report on the death of an emerging Kurdish celebrity, for example. There's other interesting themes that are also developed. They're talking about the provocative Western rhetoric against migrants. And they're also worried about ISIS militants who are disguising themselves as refugees. Saudi Arabia's Al Arabiya reports on that as well, and many unsavory characters that are taking advantage of the crisis itself. So they're looking at it from a much broader regard and a much broader angle. They're also looking at how the refugee crisis will affect Muslim identity. Many Muslim women taking off, removing the hijab, men shaving off their beards for fear of being discriminated when they're going to places like Sweden, for example, Norway, Finland, and how this is going to affect the entire narrative of the Muslim identity, the hijab, the beard, etc., and how these people will grow up. But there's one interesting angle that very few media, if at all, are reporting on, and that's that with all of this exodus and this refugee crisis, how many scholars, ulama, are we losing in Syria, Jordan, Libya, and other such places, including Iraq? So we often talk about ISIS bombing and blowing up entire archaeological sites, but how is it affecting scholarship in these areas? Great scholars in the fields of fiqh and seerah as well, still living in these areas. And if they're choosing to migrate, go into hiding, how is this affecting the narrative of Islamic scholarship for the forthcoming years?
Indeed. Hafidha, jazakumullah for your time. Much appreciated.
You're welcome. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.